I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You two, look at you, you imaging neuroscience physics snobs. You are terrible
people. Hold on, Alex. You gave us permission to be arrogant. You told us that we can inflate ourselves by being.
You empowered us. It's being with you that's making us say this.
No, fuck that. I'm no longer an ally. Fuck this. Hello and welcome to Why Aren't You a Doctor Yet? The only science and tech podcast that you love. Do you know why? Because we're in the lab every day. Yeah, we're really out here finding a way to use stem cells and artificial intelligence to advance the field of regenerative medicine. We want to create bio-artificial replacements for damaged organs, especially the trachea. Why? Because we want to save lives, maybe win some Nobel Prizes, and make sure that you don't have any guilt holding you back from banging people who deserve it right in their fucking throat. I realise that phrase may have different connotations depending on where you're from / the websites you frequent, but understand context. I am, of course, your host, Dr. Alex Lathbridge, and today I'm joined by, I'm going to say the better 50% of this hosting duo for today, the neuroscientist / I'm going to say audio icon, Dr. Oz Ismail.
Hello, so good to be back.
So Oz, how have you been this week?
I'm great. Aside from the fact that Portland is currently having the worst spring ever, apparently this is the wettest June we have had in 80 something years, so that's not fun because I've not seen any sun, but that hasn't stopped the freaking pollen from attacking me on a daily basis. So annoying.
With that in mind, and the fact that you seem to be allergic to plants or something, I mean,
everything.
that's your life, not mine. Something that'll make it slightly better is that we are joined by a fantastic individual, a fantastic guest, a brilliant person that I'm glad is sharing the air noise frequencies with us right now. It's physicist, author, and overqualified doodler of art, Dr. Jess Wade. Hi, Jess.
Hello.
That was a strong hey.
I'm so happy to be on this podcast. I think I've been a fan for a really long time, and it's just such a thrill. Aww. I think even finding time in a day when the three of us can be on a Zoom is really exciting.
Jess, how are you? What's life been like for you the last week or so?
Oh, it's been really great. We've had fantastic weather in London. We've had super nice weather, actually.
I'm must
really
be
sorry,
nice.
Oz. Yeah,
must
it's been
be
really
nice.
Great. It's been this kind of mini summer. And then we've been celebrating all things chiral. So I know we're going to start talking science in a minute, but the team I'm in won a really big prize for chemistry, which I'm really, really happy about. And then we just had the Imperial Festival this last weekend, which is like a massive science and art festival that's completely free for anyone and everyone in the world to come to. And we had such extraordinary audiences learning about molecular chirality and how we can use it in technology. So I'm kind of coming down from a massive science high and ready to do
busy.
Some awesome experiments. Always busy, Oz. Always busy.
Yeah. Well, glad we could catch you amongst all of those exciting things that you've been doing. Thank you for coming on.
It's super great.
Yeah, no, I my weekend's been great because it's been super sunny, and I've come to realize again one point in the year, every year in the UK, that British homes are not made for heat. They hold in temperature like the British Museum holds like things from other countries. That's where we hold heat.
Yeah, burn literally.
Yeah.
Okay, so no, I'm just like so excited that Jess is here because Jess, much like Alex, I also fanboyed over Jess for a long time on social media and then finally got to meet Jess just before I moved to America, I guess. Maybe 2019 is when we met at various events. And specifically, I remember the hackathon that you and a bunch of other folks hosted at UCL for Pride.
Yeah, I have such vivid memories of that.
Yeah, it was such a... I also remember there being a really great cake at the event.
Yeah, it was so good time. So for context, everyone, and for Alex, because you weren't there, it was a Wikipedia hackathon to get the stories of LGBTQ plus scientists and engineers on Wikipedia. And we ensured at all Wikipedia editathons that we could have fantastic cakes. So, of course, we had to buy a rainbow cake for that. So it was truly wonderful. And I think mainly because the cake was so wonderful and everyone there was so wonderful. The photographs from that event are some of the most colorful in my camera roll. So when I'm having like a gray and miserable day or nothing's going right in the lab, I just always go to those beacons of light.
Aw, that's so nice. I mean, I have to admit, I came to that thing and I think I spent most of my time eating the cake and maybe created like one page. Sorry. I was like, everybody else can do the work. I'm here to eat the cake and be gay.
That's so great. That's what we need.
I'm here to eat cake and be gay.
Yeah. Everything else is for allies, right?
Yeah. Oh my God. But it was a great event. But you did mention things going not so good in the lab. What is your science? This is a question that Alex and I have, like, before you came on, we're like, what? We know Jess does great science, but physics is a mystery. What is your science? Tell us. Tell us all about it.
I work in the kind of experimental solid state material science part of physics. So taking beautiful, wonderful molecules that have been synthesized by chemists and thinking about how we can process these into thin films, which form the kind of basis of lots of different technologies. So like light emitting diodes or maybe photovoltaics or maybe spin filters for quantum applications. So really thinking about how those molecules are arranging, how we can develop ways to study that arrangement, because obviously everything's happening at a super, super small scale, and then how we can optimize that arrangement to get really efficient devices. So it's kind of working between physics, chemistry, material science, kind of interfacing natural sciences and engineering. So it's a little bit of everything, but also this fantastic interest in molecules and how they're arranged with respect to one another.
So my take on that is that you are literally playing with the fabric of life.
I mean, you could say that.
Yes.
I think I'd say the fabric of technology. So I'm really, okay, really interested in materials that have kind of novel properties. So maybe they can transport charges in a particular way, or they emit light that's in different polarizations. So it could be kind of twisted light or something like that. So I'm interested in these kind of cool properties of materials and how we can understand them and then apply them in technologies. But there are people who go beyond that. So there are people who say, you know, from these kind of investigations, we can understand the fundamental nature of the universe and life. But I don't think I'm at that level of arrogance and understanding just yet.
This is a symbiotic thing, all right? People come onto here and we learn about their science and we like go forward and we have a better understanding of the universe. That's right, Oz, right?
I mean, yeah, that's literally our brand.
Yeah, exactly. And what they go away with is a heightened sense of self, perhaps bordering on arrogance, but like in a really positive way, sort of wholesome arrogance.
Like
I am
it.
The best. I am fantastic. Here are the reasons why. And it's really
I'm
good.
I'm going to stand a little taller.
Oh, yeah.
I'll go out. So particularly, and I won't spend too long on it because I could talk about it forever, but I work with molecules that are chiral. So chirality is this really interesting property of symmetry. And chiral objects are like your left and right hand. So they exist as non-superimposable mirror image pairs, which is super fancy long word, but it basically means you take your hands and you put them together palm to palm, they're mirror images of each other. But if you put them together kind of facing upwards, they're quite clearly not mirror images of one another. So if you put them together with the palms both facing down, and that's this concept of non-superimposable. And we see chirality across lots of different length scales. So you have spin up and spin down electrons, you have left and right handed photons, you see it in molecules, we see it in galaxies, we see it in pasta and in corkscrews and all of these extraordinary shapes. And I'm really interested in how we can use these left and right handed molecules to control the polarization of light or the spin of electrons. So it's kind of a step beyond just let's play around with these molecules and see what happens, and more thinking about how molecular design will influence what happens. So it's super fun. It's kind of, you know, there's never a dull moment. You're always talking to someone interesting and you're always doing an experiment where you're like, I have no idea what's going to happen. And that's absolutely fantastic.
Nah, fuck off. You're doing shit with the fabric of the universe and something like this is this. I mean, it's not wrong. Like, you explained all that. And I was like, yeah, I can follow some of those things, sort of. But I have a GCSE level of physics. Yeah. But when you started saying stuff about galaxies and all of this and all of that, you're playing with the fabric of the universe. Mm-hmm. How dare you not be cocky? You have to be cocky a little bit, right? You have to.
No, it's when you get to this. Okay, so the part where people are like, it's universe and it's fundamental laws of nature is when you think about the spin control. So as biologists will know, lots of the biological world is chiral. So amino acids are all left-handed, sugars are all right-handed, DNA is all right-handed, and it's pretty much that handedness in everything we look at, in anything that's existing on planet Earth, in any amino acids we look at in a meteorite falling to planet Earth, they all select one-handedness. And genuinely, no one knows why. There's a few kind of zany theories out there, but no one has a definitive answer why. So the people who are more ambitious, maybe the people who've been on this podcast already, you know, the people with that arrogance, they say that it's actually because they're chiral. The universe designs for systems that are chiral because we have much more efficient charge transfer in these systems because it's spin selective, X, Y, Z. So you could push it that far and you could say, not only is this science fundamental to everything we need for the future of technology, but it also explains why everything in the natural world is the way it is. But I need to get a little bit more confident to be able to shout that.
I could say all of these fantastic things. I'm looking past and to the future. I truly sit at the interface of all of these things. I could say that, but I'm not cocky enough to say that. But I could say that.
Yeah, I'm just floating it out there. I'm just saying VIP.
I'm just floating out there the idea that I do big shit. I didn't say it. I'm just saying.
No, I was going to say, honestly, though, to me, as a scientist, it still sounds like freaking magic.
It is magic.
It is. Okay, so here's the thing. I've always said that physics is magic because it's never made sense to me. I've always been bad at physics. But also, currently, I do a lot of neuroimaging. And so when people try and explain the theory behind MRI imaging, I'm just like, that makes zero sense to me. But the image that I get at the end, it's perfect, so I'll take it. I believe what you say.
I feel like that with MRI, though. I did a medical imaging course in my kind of fourth year of my physics degree, and I came home. My dad is a neurologist, and actually now my brother is a neurologist. So you can imagine they order about 50 MRIs a day for their patients. Mm. And I came home and I was like, "Holy moly! Like, I've heard you say MRI so many times, and I genuinely don't think you understand it, because if you understood it, then like, why is that not the main topic of conversation every single time you speak? Like, it's the most out there technique. And how did people discover that it would work? And like, how does anyone understand everything about it at any given point? I don't believe that all of the neurologists in the world do.
Okay, thank you. That makes me feel so much better as someone who does MRI on an almost daily basis for my experiments. Because I'm like, if someone asked me to explain, I mean, I can tell you about water and how much water there is in your brain, but how that turns into an image inside a magnet, I'm sorry, I'm out.
Even just explaining those massive magnets, even just sitting down, like, it kind of comes back to the, you know, the science communication thing and all of that and thinking about it, like, really fundamental questions of magnetism are so difficult to even begin to explain and understand that it makes these topics that kind of, you're quite happy if someone just tells it to you and you're like, yeah, I can go out and do an MRI and this is the image I get. That's fine. But if you go a little bit deeper, it's just so mind blowing the level you have mm-hmm. to get to make it clear. Yeah. No fear, Oz. You could eat. Okay. You could completely handle chirality. MRI is the challenge.
I feel so much better because I thought I would bring up MRI and you'd be like, idiot, it's so simple.
No, it's not like, so if you said like, I really don't understand how X-ray imaging worked, I'd be like, okay, what is going on here? But MRI is the...
Yeah, revoke his PhD.
I don't think you understand the level of this podcast, yeah, all right? You guys are there like, oh, well, you know what? I mean, oh yes, no one understands MRI, but if you said you didn't understand X-ray imaging, well, I'd have to think like, no. Look at you two. Look at you, you imaging neuroscience physics snobs. You are terrible.
Hold on, Alex, you gave us permission. You gave us permission to be arrogant. You told us that we can inflate ourselves by being
You empowered us. It's being with you that's making us say this.
No, fuck that. I'm no longer an ally. Fuck this. So, Jess, outside of your science and all of the other fantastic things that you do, you also, a little birdie told me that you like to go online and play on Wikipedia doing some little thing or something. Could you explain that a little bit?
Sure. So I've been probably, you know, working since the beginning of my PhD and then my postdoc to try and make science culture a little bit better and to try and improve academia in general, and to do that by trying to do a little bit of work on the kind of recruitment of women and certainly people of color to subjects like physics and engineering, but also to try and celebrate and honor the incredible scientists and engineers we have. I think that often gets overlooked in all of these diversity efforts. There's this huge kind of movement to get more girls or more students of color into these subjects, but there's not enough effort to kind of celebrate and really champion the ones that we have. And so I've been doing that in a few different ways, particularly actually through nominating people for awards and fellowships. But something that really struck me, and I learned about it in 2017, was that actually when you look at databases and kind of encyclopedias of information and knowledge, they're really dominated by old white guys. I guess it shouldn't surprise me. You go into any learned society building or any university campus and all of the portraiture is of old white guys that no one can even remember who they are anymore. But it really bugged me that online encyclopedias were like that, particularly when they're so relied on for teaching and learning and in journalism and all of these different applications. And particularly I got kind of interested in Wikipedia. So probably everyone listening knows what Wikipedia is. Maybe they're on Wikipedia at the moment looking up chirality, if you are pro-move, and I respect that. But Wikipedia is this kind of... It's this absolutely incredible, you know, democratized platform for sharing information and knowledge. It's remained since it began in the early 2000s. It kind of started at the beginning of the internet, really. And it's remained this incredibly nonpartisan, trusted source for information. So you remember when you're at school and teachers would say things like, oh, you can't cite Wikipedia, but really you can trust and rely on that huge chunky list of references at the end of Wikipedia. And people go there and people use that, you know, whether they're a high school teacher or a university educator, or whether they're a doctor in a clinic, or whether they're a journalist looking for an expert to come on air, they use that as their first port of call for knowledge. So it's massively important. It's used by billions of people every single day. But something I learned about Wikipedia was that certainly when you look at science and when you look at scientists on Wikipedia, it's incredibly non-diverse. So women are really poorly represented. Anyone who's not white is really poorly represented. Anyone from the global south is really poorly represented. Anyone pretty much who's from any historically marginalized background is incredibly underrepresented. And I hate being one of those people who sits around complaining about something. And so I thought I'm just going to do something about this. And so I spend every single evening, and I have spent every single evening since the beginning of 2018, researching and writing Wikipedia pages of scientists and engineers who are from historically marginalized groups. So that could be women, that could be people of color, it could be LGBTQ plus scientists, it could be scientists with disabilities, you know, you name it. I've tried to write about it for Wikipedia. And it started off as kind of a, you know, I feel most comfortable writing about physics, or I feel most comfortable writing about this topic, so I'll just write about that. But actually it's become really extraordinary, the amount of science information I've learned and about new disciplines and people's stories, and uncovering, you know, sometimes they're living and sometimes they're historical, and kind of learning about all of these different experiences people have had. It's made me so much better at having to write in a kind of jargon-free way about a science that I'm not super hot on at the beginning of the evening. And then I learned so much about it from trying to assemble this article. And it's been really incredible. And the most amazing thing is when you write this page and say there's someone who's alive, you can kind of track their brilliance and their reputation. You know, when I look at lists of people who've won awards, or when I look at lists of who's been made a fellow, I'm like, hey, I know that person, or like, I know who's got that award. And it's because I wrote their Wikipedia page like 3 years ago. And it's just incredible. You know, I like having scientific success. That's obviously important for me, but more than anything else, I love seeing people who have done really incredible things being recognized for their work. You know, when you see someone who's really worthy being honored for what they've done, I just feel like jumping around and punching the air. And every time one of these people gets a prize, I like ring my mum and I'm like, oh my God. And so it's just a thrill, you know, it's a gift that keeps giving.
But did you start off, when you started writing biographies, did you start off with like some really big names that you realized had no Wikipedia page and deserved to have one? Or did you just randomly pick somebody and did it start off as a random evening hobby? Like how did it start?
Well, I started off by going to a training just like that LGBTQ plus the Pride one that we did at UCL a couple of years ago. And mm-hmm. I started off by going to something like that. And it was actually about writing about British women engineers from the past. And I found it interesting, but kind of frustrating, because when you look back in history, as I'm sure lots of listeners of this will have done, particularly at UK science and engineering history, to be a successful engineer, you had to be incredibly rich, married to someone incredibly rich, the sister of someone incredibly rich, and almost categorically, you had to be white and like an heiress. And so it started off as kind of looking at that. And I was just like, I can't write about this all the time. You know, I don't really care about these people. And then I started writing about women professors in the UK, particularly in physics departments. So I just kind of look through physics department lists and chemistry department lists and see who was a professor. And then increasingly realized that, hey, that's also incredibly non-diverse. You know, there's only a handful of black women professors out of the 19,500 professors in this country. So then I had to start going quite a lot further afield. And that's when I started kind of branching out into different disciplines, and particularly looking at people from all around the world. So I guess I'm like everyone here, and it must be the same because you've done so many episodes of this now, but I really like a challenge. And I thought I can either just rock up at one editathon every few months and, you know, write a paragraph and feel good about myself for half an hour when I'm on the tube home, or I can say I'm going to do this every day and I'm just going to chill out in my pajamas with a nice cup of milk and write my Wikipedia page. And I was like, I'm going to do that. You know, I love it. And then every morning I'd kind of wake up and I'd text it to, you know, my dad, and he'd be like, that's really nice, Jess. Like, thanks. And then, you know, that would be it. And then in mid 2018, just after I'd started, in the kind of summer of that year, someone from The Guardian came to write about it. And I thought kind of nothing of it at the time. And I just thought it was going to be an education supplement of The Guardian. And I came home and I was like, oh, I'm going to be in this education thing. And I thought it was, you know, one of those little handouts that comes inside. But it wasn't. It's in the main newspaper. And then for about a week, everyone in the world wanted to talk to me about Wikipedia. I think I became like the Wikipedia spokesperson. I was like, oh, yes. OK, let's talk about this. Let's talk. And actually, even though it was fantastic, and, you know, I'll talk at length about how important it is as an education resource, and particularly the need to better honor these incredible scientists and engineers, it meant that there was like a lot more attention on my editing. And so then all of the other Wikipedia editors were like, oh, how dare you say these people are notable? They're not notable enough.
Wait. So as soon as you got some recognition, other Wikipedia editors were like, well.
So it kind of turns out that, so Wikipedia has a massive problem in the diversity of who edits. So because it started in the early 2000s, pretty much all of the senior, you know, most kind of built up Wikipedia contributors are white men in North America. You know, it's almost entirely men. It's like 80 to 90% men, and almost all of them are in North America. And, you know, they write about kind of cricket teams and weird telephone boxes in the north of England and like battleships. But they don't write about the biographies of scientists from historically marginalized groups. And it turns out if you say that everywhere, if you're like pretty much all Wikipedia editors are a little bit sexist and racist, and you go around everywhere saying that, they get a little bit offended. So that's what happened in the summer of 2018. So then it was like, okay, I've got to up my skills a little bit. So I'm not only writing now because these people deserve honoring, I've got to kind of write to defend that, how incredible they are, to these, you know, gang of anonymous Wikipedia editors online.
I can't believe you have to defend.
It's so frustrating,
you literally
sent
someone's writing about telephone boxes in random parts of England. I cannot believe.
So it has notability criteria for good reasons and bad reasons. It's a general interest encyclopedia, right? So of course there should be something that defines whether it's notable enough. Not every single person's dog can have a Wikipedia page. I completely understand that. Although obviously me and Alex's dogs should have Wikipedia pages.
Yeah, shout out Dennis.
But I do think that actually the notability criteria, like most of academic science, you know, it's what we choose to honor. It's how many citations people have, how big the grants are that they bring in, how, you know, what kind of named position they have at whatever kind of university. And we know, like the three of us and all of these listeners, you know that those criteria are biased. We know that they self-select for people who are privileged. So you've kind of got to know how the system works to try and improve it. So that's actually, it kind of goes hand in hand with this nominating people for awards, because if we can get people better recognized, then it's easier to write about them. And that's, yeah, it's all cyclical, this horrible privilege that we have in science. Like, you're celebrated and you're championed and you do well, and then as a result of that, you get more opportunities. So you're more celebrated and you're more championed and you do well again. It's that kind of breaking in that is really difficult.
Yeah, I mean, you're doing so much, and you're doing so much like positive stuff there. And I really like the this sort of thing you're fighting up against. You know, you're saying all these like Wikipedia editors and like, you know, white dudes in North American stuff who are, you know, being very angry and making sure that everything like you edit, looking at it through like a fine tooth comb, and, you know, almost like frothing at the mouth essentially. And you're there like every day in your little comfy like pajamas, I imagine, drinking your milk and doing all these edits and that, and being like, yeah, you know what, I can do this every day, I'm here all week, I'm built different, I got this. I just like that mental image. It's nice.
Yeah, it's super nice. I mean, I should say the majority of Wikipedia editors are probably absolutely brilliant. It's just the loudest ones. It's like in anything, right? Like, the loudest ones are the ones who aren't.
I sort of took a look around, and I even looked at your Wikipedia page, Jess. And, you know, like you say, the more things you do, the more championing you get and the more accolades you receive. But my biggest question is, your Wikipedia photo that you've chosen, I want to know the story behind it. Because if you look at it, and if people right now who are listening take their phones out on their computers,
is it
like
disgusting?
In Jess Wade, look at the photo, it looks like you're introducing a cake.
Or a large hamster.
I just want to come in and say, I don't edit anything. I never look at this Wikipedia page. That as a person in society, one should not write or edit their own Wikipedia page. It's supposed to be written by someone who is impartial towards you. And you know, me as a Wikipedia editor, I can't write about anyone that I love or that I hate or that pays my salary. They're the kind of three criteria. But my own Wikipedia page, I I mean, there's a lot of issues that I would change if I could change it. But I like that photo. I think it's funny. It was me trying to explain some concept in the materials that we look at. It was some funny thing at Imperial, and I was like, I don't even know what I'm doing, but I like the idea that you could just put a little Nerf ball inside or something. You could be doing something really cool.
I think what you should do is you should Photoshop a Grammy there. I think it looks like you've just won a Grammy and you're so surprised. You know how like...
Yeah, I would go for that. I like that. I also like that necklace is from the accessories section of a kids shop, because I was like, this is the kind of person I am. This is the brand I have.
look at you, your Wikipedia page with your Claire's accessories necklace, winning all these awards, being a great person, damn.
it has googly eyes on.
Oh, yeah, damn.
They should like in the caption, you know how like in fashion magazines they write, you know, Jess is wearing.
That's what I'm here for it. Hoodie model's own.
So if either Oz or I were to Photoshop, as I say, put a small Grammy in there, I know it couldn't be put onto your Wikipedia page, but would you make it your Twitter display photo? Come on.
I like my picture still. I have a picture on Twitter which is the t-shirt that became the cover of Angela's book Inferior. When Inferior was so successful, they made a t-shirt. Well, it was mass marketed and it got a new cover, and I like having that. Although I was actually just at something today where I was presenting an award to some kids who'd done some great science, and someone introduced me and said to the entire audience, you should read Jess's book, Inferior. And I was like, I did not write it. Like, there's been a massive miscommunication.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, but speaking of books, you have actually written a book though, haven't you? Like, you recently wrote a book for kids.
Yes, that is a true fact. So I wrote a children's picture book called Nano, The Spectacular Science of the Very, Very Small. And it's about nanoscience and chemistry and materials. And it's actually kind of, well, I wrote the words, and the fantastic illustrator called Melissa Castrion did the illustrations. And it's kind of a hardback. I'd say it's a coffee table book for people of the age who don't have coffee tables. But it's really introducing nanoscience in this kind of absolutely beautiful and very visual way, and thinking about how we can design materials to be more sustainable and efficient and actually something I really wanted to do, and it was to talk about the kind of scientific process and you know, methods and how we set out and we don't really know what we're going to be able to do or what we can do. And at the end, we discover all these incredible things. And, you know, it's okay if we mess up because we learn things as part of that. And I think it's great.
But how did that come about? Like, did you always want to write a kid's book, or did you want to write a science book? Why specifically this book?
So actually, after the kind of buzz around all the Wikipedia editing, quite a few publishers wrote to me and said, do you want to write a book about women scientists? Or do you want to write this kind of top 50 women in science book? And I kind of thought, well, those books already exist and people don't read them often anyway. And also the kind of people who pick up those books aren't the kind of people we really need to convince. You know, if you're going to a bookshop and buying a book about women scientists, then you're probably on the same page that I am anyway. Whereas actually what I wanted to do, and I think children's books are a beautiful way of doing this, is to try and get kids and adults really excited about areas of science they didn't know yet. You know, that we don't learn about materials or nanomaterials or the fact that science could be remotely interdisciplinary. We don't learn about that at school. You don't learn about it at primary school, and you don't learn about it at secondary school. And certainly at primary school, all the books that I got as a child and that you see in bookshops are like dinosaurs, the body, space. You know, there's a very fixed category list that you get for kids' science books. So then kind of out of the blue, I had a chat with these editors at Walker, the kids book publisher. And Walker, to everyone in the audience, are the publishers who publish Where's Wally. So I was like, OK, that's my level. And so I went and had a chat with them. And, you know, it's so different than academic publishing. You know, in academic publishing, we slog and we slog and we write these papers and you submit it to someone and then the editor's really horrible or the peer reviewers are really horrible or something about the process makes you feel terrible. And you go into a kid's book publisher and you're like, I've got this kind of idea to write about atoms and molecules. And they're like, oh my gosh, that's the most incredible thing I've ever heard. And everything you say, so it's like being cuddled for an hour when you're in there, like you're just saying all these ideas. And it was such a different world. And they were really like, it doesn't matter how long it takes, we'll find a perfect illustrator. And then, you know, when they showed me some of Mel's illustrations, she's really extraordinary. You know, she's half from the UK and half from Colombia. And she went and did a art degree in children's book illustration. And she's done all of these incredible nonfiction. She's done all of these incredible fiction books that are very floral and beautiful and whimsical. And then she went to all of her illustration friends and she said, I've been offered this job illustrating a book about nanoscience. And all of her friends were like, don't do it. It will be so dry. It will be so boring.
Oh, no.
And so it took a bit of time for her to come round. But actually, it turns out that you can illustrate nanoscience in this beautiful, whimsical, mysterious and kind of captivating way. And we're basically the same person. So we're like the same height and the same like energy level. And we look quite similar. And so when we've been doing things together since the book came out, and we've done a few children's workshops around the country around drawing nanomaterials out, it's like we're the perfect match, even though we didn't, you know, we didn't meet naturally. The publishers introduced us. So it just worked out. You know, I had completely not planned to do this. And I still can't quite believe that I have done it. You know, it's such a beautiful book. But actually, I'm so thrilled that they gave me the opportunity to do it and to have had the chance to work with her, because it really makes you think differently about how you communicate what we do as scientists.
I mean, that's really, really sweet. I haven't bought the book myself because I'll only buy it.
You're
if
not
I...
six.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And I imagine a six-year-old with disposable income like that.
I really love it. I have to tell you, Alex, after all of these kids things you do at like science festivals, they're like, do you want to do a signing afterwards? And me and Mel sit there at a table and I'm like, by the way, none of these children have their own money. And they're like, oh, just come. You don't know who'll show up. And I'm like, I know no one will show up. So we're sitting there for like an hour. And I'm like, I'm so sorry, Mel. I'm so sorry, Mel. That's basically the whole time. I'm like, so yeah, you're right. I'll send you a free copy, don't worry. My mum seems to be determined to buy every copy that she finds. So
I mean, see, the issue is I don't know any children, and my wife and I aren't having children, so it's just going to sit there, and I'm going to read it, and I'm going to be like, damn, this shit is written at my level of physics understanding. Fuck.
I think it's a good introduction to science that other people do. I think, you know, there's nothing about it that, you know, when I think about what's happening when I do an experiment or when I try and put together slides for a presentation, an academic presentation, it's not massively different language to how I write in Nano. You know, that's, I have to think at that super clear level to understand things. And you certainly have to think at that super clear level to be able to teach things. So I think actually children's books are amazing because you have that conversation with a six-year-old, you have that conversation with their parents, you have that conversation with their teachers, and you have to have the same track and messaging. So I actually think, I wish that more of my friends, hint, hint, nudge, nudge, you two, would write children's books that you could kind of use as their primer to science. I don't want to read like another, you know, 400-page book on X. I want to read the like nice, beautifully illustrated introduction.
I will buy your book for my nephew, but also I feel like I almost push a lot of science stuff on him that I feel bad that I'm not helicopter parenting, but you know what I mean? I'm just like, I'm a scientist, so you should be interested in these science things. But, you know, at least if my friends have written science books, it's a good reason for me to be like,
yeah, I'll send one to your nephew. I'll send a VIP one. that just means that I bought some really beautiful shiny envelopes. They're like holographic envelopes. I'm so happy.
Oh my god!
Them.
And also you can sign that one. He will take a signed copy.
Yeah, I sign it, and in the signing, I'm like, I'm so sorry. This might be value of the book. Love, Jess.
I like that you've come on here, proper like, oh, you know what? Yeah, no, I do big shit with science, but hey, I'm really sorry that me signing this book that I wrote lovingly has made it worse. I'm really, really sorry. Pick a lane, Jess.
When me and Mel have done these things together, the illustrator of Nano, I always sign it. I'm like, become a scientist, and underneath she crosses out and writes, become an artist.
Okay, I love the balance there. I love the balance.
I mean, I like that you're telling Oz and I to write children's books. You know how chaotic that would be? I don't know what I would write a children's book about.
Oh my gosh, you could do so many things, Alex.
It would be terrible. And also, I do have much love for my book agent. Shout out Kate Barker, who has been stuck with me for the last few years. And I've been like, oh yeah, I'm going to get something out this year. And then life throws a shit curveball in my life. I'm like, oh no, I can still write about science. Don't worry, I'm still here. And she's like, don't worry. I'm like, okay, this little interlude's mostly for Kate. Kate, I love you.
Well, so Kate, get him on kids' books. That's what I'm saying.
No, there's literally...
Yes.
There's not many words in a kid's book. You know, if you're struggling to produce, you've probably got enough. You know, you just take it to a publisher and say, here's my piece. It may be pitched a little high for now, but that's where they step in and do their work.
Nah, Kate, don't listen, believe in me. Anyway, off of the back of that, you are not necessarily just science, because you have a background in art as well, don't you? Because a little birdie told me, in little birdie, I mean your Wikipedia page, you went to art school.
Yeah. And I'm completely fascinated by art. You know, I think I did art at A-level, and I remember thinking even then, like we were learning about, you know, the Italian Renaissance or whatever. And you learn, like, back then artists were scientists and they were engineers and they were people who were architects. You know, they were designing not only how ornately you'd decorate the doors of a cathedral or a mosque or a temple, they were really thinking about the metals and the materials that they'd use to be able to do it and the processing. And I just thought it was completely absurd. You know, I had really distinct and profound thoughts as a 17-year-old, obviously, but it was really absurd that we had to separate ourselves into these different groups. And so I went off, and when I finished school I went to Chelsea School of Art for a bit, and I went to live in Italy with an Italian landlady who spoke not a word of English, and I spoke not a word of Italian. And it turns out she was actually a super cool history of art professor. I found her on some funny website for students going to live in Italy and learn about the Renaissance. And so I had this really extraordinary time of learning incredible facts and visiting beautiful places. And I think since then, I've always been I really love drawing. I find it incredibly relaxing to draw. And you know, probably that's reflected in my revision notes from my physics undergrad as much as it is in like my sketchbook from doing an art degree. But I think that it's how I process and understand information. Even now, you know, I use the lockdown to hone in my skills on visualization and making graphical abstracts and doing all the figures really beautifully for our group. So anytime anyone's writing a paper, I'm like, who needs figures? Okay, what diagrams do we need? Can I help? Let's make that 3D. And I'm so critical when I see like people's presentations and they've done everything in this really horrible way. And so, yeah, I don't know. I have a deep respect for people in the creative industries, you know, in art and music and theatre, whatever. And I think it's amazing to be around them. But also I think as scientists, we really need to kind of take the time to think about how we communicate what we're doing, you know, incredibly complicated things scientifically. And that often comes in a really brilliant figure or kind of fantastic presentation. And so, yeah, I find it incredibly relaxing drawing, playing on Illustrator for like 4 hours. I watch lots of YouTube videos of like how to make a sphere or like how to make something that looks like a wiggle in 3D. And what is even a wiggle? But you know, I love doing that. I love getting into that kind of level of being able to design and draw.
Also on that same note, can we talk about your really cool nail art? Because yeah. When we were talking about your art stuff, Alex sent me this whole thread of your nails and my mind was blown. They're gorgeous.
I have a really good nail painter. So I've been going for a few. There's this phenomenal woman, Charmadine Reed, who is kind of an extraordinary businesswoman and has set up all of these networks, particularly for Black British women all over the UK. And for a time after she was at art school, or at fashion college, she set up a nail salon called Wah Nails that was in Soho. It was actually next door to the Supreme shop. So, you know, I felt ultra street every time I went there. And I met this extraordinary woman called Anushka. And she's, you know, she's a celebrity on Instagram and has all of these huge partnerships now with all of these drinks brands and super sports brands and these extraordinary things. But at the time, she was just starting out. And this was probably back 2016, 2017. And I used to always just go to Anushka, mainly because it was so separate to the lab. Like, you'd just rock up and you'd go in and you'd just be in this space where no one really cared about what units you'd used on an axis or what kind of condition you'd used to make a measure. And it was so chill. And then since then, Anushka's gone and become stratospheric and actually only works like 2 days a week and doesn't take on new clients. And it's all like, you know, the dream of what you want when people are super talented and they find their way. But every now and then when she has a free moment, I drop in and I'm like, oh, by the way, will you paint these molecules on my nails? Or like, I'm going to see my friend at NASA next week. Can you paint the NASA logo on my nails? And then I set her a little scientific challenge. So I'll be there in this super cool West London salon where she's got all of these different sponsorships from all of her different collaborations, and there'll be some incredibly cool music playing, and I'll be like, no, this is the chemical structure I want, this is where the double bond should be, this is how you but she's like absolutely brilliant. And you know those people, and it's exactly like you two, like you have such a nice time when you're with them, you leave feeling like good about the world. And you can go in and you're feeling like, you know, I can feel pretty miserable and I can feel pretty sad and I can feel pretty like, oh, everyone on Twitter's angry all the time. And I go in to see Anushka and it's just like a breath of fresh air. And so, yeah, I don't know. I love this because there's absolutely no way in a million years she ever has these conversations about the super weird scientist who ever comes in. You know, she's never on a podcast and she's like, oh, by the way, guess whose nails I paint? I paint molecules onto Jess's nail. But really, Anushka, she is a complete thrill to be around. And I was so worried at the beginning of lockdown because, you know, anyone who was self-employed obviously found it incredibly hard. And something like nails isn't something that you can socially distance from. But she went off, she set up a new salon, she got all these new gigs, she painted everything, you know, she made it all beautiful, she did nail classes online. She's really that kind of person who's just true grit and resilience. And I just love that. So it's not just the experience of having beautiful nails at the end, which I obviously like, but it's also that experience of being around someone who is so extraordinarily creative and sets himself a challenge. Like, you know, I work with these, I told you about the molecules, these chiral molecules, but particularly a subset of that called helicenes, which are kind of six benzene rings connected in such a way that they kind of trace out a helix. You know, they're spirals because of the way that the benzenes are joined up. And it's quite an elaborate structure for a chemist to draw on paper. It's really, really difficult to draw on my thumbs. And Anushka does it with this kind of meticulous precision. And I just really like it. You know, I print out a little picture of what I want, and I put it down in front of her, and she just looks at me like, "Oh, Jess." and then she just does it, and it's so great.
I like that it seems that you surround yourself with like creative people as much as possible. Like, is that intentional?
I don't know if it isn't. You know, my best friend from school is a musician, and he didn't go to university, and he's by far my most successful friend. You know, he's bought a house in Primrose Hill. He has a recording studio in the basement. His life is charmed, and his goddaughter's beautiful. His wife is beautiful. And I've been spending quite a lot of time with them in lockdown, and just like going for walks and things, and everything about them is just completely magical to be around. And I think I love kind of collecting that energy and feeling that energy. And you do think differently. You're like, hey, we could do this for that science festival, or maybe we could take our science to that place. Or they just came on the weekend. We had this huge festival, like I mentioned, at Imperial, and my musician part of my world came down, and it was actually so cool because Marla, my goddaughter, was walking along Exhibition Road, well, shuffling along. She's just turned one, and for some bizarre reason Mo Farah was there. So now she's got all these pictures of herself with Mo Farah because he was at the Exhibition Road festival. But I love that intersection of art and science, and I do think it is so important that scientists think about it more often. And you know, it's like running a podcast, right? You have to surround yourself with people who thought this was a cool idea to do. And not all scientists would think that, but you found that world that you could embed yourself into. And I think that's quite extraordinary.
Oh, thanks. I like that. That I like compliments. Compliments always make me happy.
Well, you know me, Alex. I love you. So I could just sit here complimenting for ad nauseum. You know, you tell me when to stop and I'll keep going.
This is not... Please don't enable me. This is a terrible thing. So I think I do have one question on the Wikipedia front. And I asked, if you remember, people who've listened, Roma Agrawal, who built the Shard, when she came on, I asked this similar question. Now, a part of your work, sort of your work with Wikipedia and all this stuff, you've, you know, received a lot of accolades. And one of them is a British Empire Medal. Why are you supporting imperialism while at the same time writing about diversity, Jess? Huh? Why are you doing it? Why are you doing it, Jess?
It's a really good question. And I think in retrospect, it's probably something I'd have had a very different response to. You know, that the letter actually came to my parents' house, and it said to Dr. J. Wade, and my dad opened it because he is also Dr. J. Wade. And he read it and he was like, oh, cool, like finally being recognized for all the dope neurology I've done. And he read the whole thing and he was like, just take a look, like I'm being honored. And I was like, shit, Dad, that's so cool. And then all the pronouns were like her, or I can't remember the exact wording, but it was like she, her. And he was like, oh, it must be your mother. So my mum is a psychiatrist. And he was like, and to be honest, my mum deserves, and my dad also deserves infinite honours for the work they've done, whatever. But anyway, so it was about 15 very funny minutes of him thinking it was him for a long time, and then it must be my mum. So it's quite funny that. But also, I just liked the concept that it was for, I tried to get them to write for services to Wikipedia, but the house, the royal family or whoever decides what you get to write wouldn't let us do that. But I think I was just so overwhelmed that it was such a cool way to recognize contributions to equality in science. You know, it wasn't just me being recognized as an individual. It was being recognized as something for championing a more progressive view for the future. And you know, the most extraordinary people at that ceremony for getting it were people who had done services, who'd been given them for services to the community, for setting up kind of incredibly long-lasting faith groups of interdisciplinary faith. There was someone who'd got it for services to setting up a community boxing group. So it really didn't feel like it was one of these awards that was being given to people who were just fusty old, you know, honorary peers for no reason. I don't know. I mean, I think that's a very long-winded way of saying I can't justify it. I absolutely hate the fact that it's got Empire in. I hate the fact that when I read that first line of a Wikipedia page, as you made me do, it says that Jess is a British. Ugh, it sounds so disgusting. And even just that term. And then it has got that word Med Empire. And I just think, ugh.
How you but, feel, Jess? Huh?
Well, I hate it. That's why I don't look at it. And I hate whenever anyone introduces me for anything. I really like the one that I really like that always gets put up. And this is the only award I'll let them say. Because I think it's such a funny accolade. Let me just look up. Maybe it's even been taken out now. But it was like an award saying that I was like 155th in the top UK women in tech. You know, it's like Jess is the like 47th best woman in technology. And I just think that's the kind of level I'm at. Like, I want to be bottom of a very long list. So I completely don't like the legacy that it stands on, and I'm quite embarrassed by it, but I like the work that contributed to it. So if I could go back in time, I probably wouldn't have been as quick to say, yeah, that's I'm gonna say yes. But you know, I'm actually quite, here's a top secret for you, I'm quite terrified of opening any post. I always think I'm gonna get in trouble about something, and so letters like that I always make my mum open. I always think there's bad news. So I'm really bad at opening mail or post or whatever people call it. So I just think I just can't do it. So probably, you know, in my overwhelming excitement that I'd actually managed to open a piece of post for the first time, then I was like, you know, sign on the dotted line.
Can we talk about the fact that it essentially boils down to, oh, I hate answering posts. Oh, I just get so many accolades. Oh, no. I'm just so successful.
You're just giving Alex so much fodder, Jess.
I'm so paranoid now. I want to come back to say, Alex, you 100% have to write a book for grown-ups. I'm just saying, on the side, you have to write a kid's book. Like, let Kate force you into writing the grown-up one for sure, but definitely do a kid's one. I keep reflecting and thinking I've said a terrible thing, and I did not mean it in a terrible way.
Yeah, way to traumatise our guests, Alex.
Yeah, wow. Well, look, you win some, you lose some, by which I mean British Podcast Awards. I think that's, I mean, Oz, do you have any more questions? Because, I mean, this has been I've loved this.
It's been such a great chat. Obviously I have so many questions. We could talk for hours with Jess, but I feel like we should wrap it up. It's been such a freaking great convo, and I can't wait to read your book.
I'll for sure send one to you in Portland, and I'll send one to wherever the nephew is. And Alex, I'll send you multiple. The real question is, do you want it in English or do you want it in Estonian? The other key language of the science children's book market.
Really? That was seriously.
What?
So left field. So when you write a kid's book, they kind of don't, you know, you have no say in where the rights get sold in anything. Or, you know me, I probably just signed on the dotted line and said, sell it wherever you want. But anyway, they came back to me and they were like, it's going to be a French version. I was like, fine, that sounds legit. And then they were like, oh, and by the way, Estonia were really interested. And apparently it's quite rare for Estonia to pick up like English kids' books and translate them. But that's where my big audience is. So if you want an Estonian version, it's coming your way.
Jess Wade, nice. Big in Estonia. I like that.
That's what I want my Wikipedia to say. None of this racist old empire crap. Just Jess Wade, a big deal in Estonia, yeah. for a moment.
Accomplished Estonian publisher, Jess Wade.
47th best woman in science.
I like it.
We we have come to the end of the podcast. This is where people generally make sad noises. So if one of you two could make a sad noise.
Wah, wah.
Well, that was very good. Very gone girl there. I enjoy that. terrifying. Oz, do you feel like you've learned something new today?
I certainly have. I've learned a lot about chirality. And I've learned about publishing in Estonia. Yeah.
Jess, have you enjoyed yourself today?
I've completely loved being here today. I'm 10 out of 10 smiling.
I have loved it today. I've learned so much. It's been fantastic. I've been joined by Oz and Jess. Say bye, guys.
Bye.
And this has been Why Aren't You a Doctor Yet? Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.